The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday. We made it to a Thursday, well, many of us anyway. Except if you're in Puerto Rico, we have a president who's now threatening to cut off all the help, such as it is, to pull FEMA out of Puerto Rico. No kidding. This is how he began his day today on Twitter, threatening. He says, Puerto Rico survived the hurricanes. Really? I think you might get some pushback on that. Now a financial crisis looms largely of their own making, says Cheryl Atkinson. A total lack of accountability, say the governor. Electric and all infrastructure was disaster before hurricanes. Congress to decide how much to spend. And here's the kicker, folks. Here comes the kicker. We cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders who have been amazing under the most difficult circumstances in Puerto Rico forever. What forever? It's been 22 days, and they haven't done a whole lot yet. This is how he started his day. Now, in the middle of the day, Donald Trump, well, he did his best to undermine the Affordable Care Act. He couldn't get it done through Congress, so he signed an executive order. I want to know where all the people who were screaming about Obama's executive orders, where they are on all of the Trump executive orders. Anyway, this executive order he signed, I know some people think, well, it was just so that he can sell insurance across state lines, right? No. By the way, one thing Wendell Potter told us the last time he was here is that it's already legal for an insurance company to sell across state lines. They just don't do it because it doesn't make smart business sense, because you got to set up a whole infrastructure in whatever state you sell in. So they don't do it. Nothing has ever said they couldn't. They just didn't want to. But this, what is being offered, or what is ostensibly being allowed under this executive order, and I've yet to figure out if this actually paves the way for these this new program, these new plans to go into effect, or if they're just, you know, like many of his other executive orders, sort of toothless. But the best explanation I found was from BuzzFeed, and here's what they wrote. President Trump, Donald Trump, signed an executive order Thursday that could radically transform Obamacare and the American healthcare system in general, all without having to go through Congress. Trump's order will allow small businesses to band together and join their own unregulated insurance plans that can offer less coverage at cheaper prices. Yeah, bringing back the junk policies. This is what this is all about. Obamacare rules would not apply to these plans, meaning they can drop coverage for things like maternity care, mental health services, and prescription drugs. Who needs those anyway, right? Crucially, these off-market plans would open the door for people with pre-existing health conditions to be charged higher rates. Yes, doesn't this sound wonderful? Donald Trump's brave new world. Back to BuzzFeed. That could leave behind a disproportionately sicker and thus more expensive group that needs the protections of Obamacare, driving up prices for those still on the small group or individual markets. So basically, what it'll do is open the door for these associations. For instance, it could be tire sellers, the Tire Sellers Association of America, a group that I just made up. But it could be an association of, you know, companies that sell tires, right? And the insurance companies could pick and choose which of the companies could be in this plan, and limit it to only those with healthy employees. Where if you have, if a company has too many employees who are not healthy, they can be kicked off and sent back to, you know, the exchanges as they were, which will be getting a whole lot more expensive. Here, let me read a little more. Trump's order Thursday allows small businesses to band together to form health associations and buy their own group insurance plans outside of Obamacare markets. Whereas the Affordable Care Act attempted to keep costs down by pushing as many people as possible into a single insurance pool with regulated, robust health plans, Trump's order incentivizes healthy people and businesses with healthy employees to leave the markets. Associations could self-select, this is what I was talking about, by accepting only businesses with healthy employees. If a business has enough employees that require expensive health care, premiums for everyone in that workplace could be jacked up. By doing this, associations can keep their prices down and price out the most expensive workers. Companies that can't afford to stay in an association would then have to turn to the regulated small group market or have their employees get coverage on the individual market where they can't be denied coverage. But if enough healthy people join associations under Trump's new order, prices on the Obamacare markets will rise, potentially dramatically. And that's the important part you have to know. The other important part is this will be they'll be offering up these junk policies again. So chances are a lot of people will think, well, they're paying insurance premiums. They're, you know, Donald Trump said it would be cheaper and better and cheaper and better. You don't get something for nothing. And people who are believing this are, you know, the ones who voted for the con man. Bottom line is you'll get sick. You'll be able to be kicked off. You see, the Obamacare rules and regulations, which are good things, will not apply to these policies. So if you get sick, they could kick you off. If you need prescription drugs, they could say they're not covered. If you need mental health care, they could say, sorry, not covered. If you get pregnant, they can say, sorry, not covered, because they don't have to have coverage for those essential health care items that all of the policies under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, have to cover by law. So people will be kicked off. This is bad. You know, I don't talk a whole lot about what's going on with me these days because last time I checked, I was cancer-free. But for those who haven't been around for a long time, last summer, I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and I had surgery, all due to Obamacare. The only reason I had health insurance was because of the Affordable Care Act, because with pre-existing conditions, and as someone who will turn 58 in less than a month, you don't reach my age without having something going on, right? So pre-existing conditions. Now I have had lung cancer, so that's another pre-existing condition, but I had a melanoma before that. So I was already a cancer survivor. And before the Affordable Care Act came into law, I couldn't buy a policy on the open market. So now I'm able to, but who knows with all the uncertainty, with the cost sharing reductions, which Trump still hasn't said whether he's paying or not. You know, I take advantage of the subsidy. So I'm one of those people. I have the silver plan and it's subsidized by the government, and that makes it somewhat affordable. On November 1st, the exchanges open, something that you might not know if you don't hear me say it, because they've cut all the advertising about it, because they don't want you to buy your policy on the exchange. Let me repeat that again. They do not want you to buy your health insurance policy on the exchange. They want to paraphrase a phrase, drown it in the bathtub. They want to give you these fake, options of other choices, you know, junk policies that won't cover anything if you get sick, to get you out of the exchange so they can drown it, so they can kill it, so they can, you know, do without it. Hopefully, Victoria Jones in today's segment with the Talk Media News Service will have a little more on what exactly this this new executive order means. Now, I did see someone tweeted that, don't worry, this is only guidelines and it'll be years before it goes into effect. The bottom line, though, is it's going to have an effect on those health insurers who are trying to decide, or do they stay in, do they go out of the individual market, of the exchanges. They're already locked in for this year. If they're in, they're in. But you know, we haven't seen the prices yet. And the volatility, the uncertainty that's been created by this administration will only serve to drive prices up. So let's check in for the latest news with What's News, and then we'll get Victoria Jones of the Talk Media News Service next. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
In a series of early morning tweets, the president on Thursday threatening to pull federal workers from Puerto Rico, abandoning the U.S. territory during its humanitarian crisis in the wake of Hurricane Maria. Electric and all infrastructure was disaster before hurricanes. Congress to decide how much to spend, he tweeted, adding, we cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders who have been amazing under the most difficult circumstances in Puerto Rico forever. More than 3 weeks after Maria, over 80% of the island is still without power. Just 63% of the island's residents have access to clean drinking water, and only 60% of wastewater treatment plants are operating, all according to FEMA. After failing to repeal the Affordable Care Act in Congress, the president will act on his own to relax health care standards on small businesses that band together to buy health insurance by signing an executive order. Speaking with Fox's Sean Hannity at a rally-style interview Wednesday night, Trump explained,
we're going to have great health care, cross state lines. People can buy it. Will cost the government nothing. You'll go out. Private insurers are going to give you incredible health care. And I'll tell you what, this will take, and I can sign it myself. I don't need anybody. I would have done it earlier, except I was hoping that they were going to put this through and I'd have it in the bill. But right. We're signing tomorrow a health care package that will cover, I don't know, people say 30%, people say 25%, and some people say it could be 50%. It's going to cover a large percentage of the people.
Democrats and some state regulators are alarmed, calling this another attempt to undermine President Obama's health care law. Insurance experts are worried that the influx of a set of plans exempt from the ACA rules will divide the market and make it increasingly unstable. More fallout from NBC's report on a July meeting in which Trump allegedly said that he wanted a tenfold increase in the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile. The president has been railing against the report on Twitter, threatening to use the federal government's power to license TV airwaves to target NBC. Networks aren't licensed, by the way. Individual stations are, just saying.
President Trump reacted to yesterday's NBC News exclusive report about what happened during a meeting at the Pentagon last July by attacking the press and seemingly freedom of the press. He tweeted yesterday morning, quote, with all the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country. And again last night. Network news has become so partisan, distorted, and fake that licenses must be challenged and, if appropriate, revoked. Not fair to public. To be clear, the networks themselves do not hold federal licenses. Their individual television stations do. Right? I mean, only a moron would think that anyhow. The president said more in a rally-style interview with Fox News held in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
If I was just watching television, you don't know whether or not, because, you know, you're just watching a report. But when you're the one being written about, you know if it's good or bad, and it's always, they try and make it negative. So the media has turned that, I call it fake media. It's fake.
Fake
news. So much fake news. And we have to
understand. You agree with that, fake news?
Later, in an Oval Office meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Trump said,
do you want to reduce the nuclear arsenal?
No, I never discussed increasing it. I want it in perfect shape. That was just fake news by NBC, which gives a lot of fake news lately. No, I never discussed. I think somebody said I want 10 times the nuclear weapons that we have right now. Right now, we have so many nuclear weapons. I want them in perfect condition, perfect shape. That's the only thing I've ever discussed. General Mattis put out a statement, or is putting out a statement, saying that that was fake news, that it was just mentioned that way. And it's frankly disgusting the way the press is able to write whatever they want to write. and people should look into it. No, I want to have absolutely perfectly maintained, which we are in the process of doing, nuclear force. But when they said I want 10 times what we have right now, it's totally unnecessary, believe me, because I know what we have right now.
During Wednesday night's interview with Sean Hannity, Trump made a number of claims that just didn't make sense, including his statement that the stock market bump is wiping out the national debt.
And I'm so proud of the $5.2 trillion of increase in the stock market. Now, if you look at the stock market, that's one element, but then we have many other elements. The country, we took it over, it owed $20 trillion. As you know, the last 8 years, they borrowed more than it did in the whole history of our country. So they borrowed more than $10 trillion, right? And yet we picked up $5.2 trillion just in the stock market, possibly picked up the whole thing in terms of the first 9 months in terms of value. So you could say in one sense we're really increasing values, and maybe in a sense we're reducing debt. But we're very honored by it.
The number of wildfires burning California is growing. 22 different fires are out of control, having burned through 265 square miles around the state. More than 8,000 firefighters and other personnel are battling the blazes, and more resources are pouring in from other states. At least 3,500 homes and businesses have been destroyed, and at least 23 lives lost since the fire started on Sunday. The president will nominate Kirstjen Nielsen as the new head of the Department of Homeland Security. A cybersecurity expert with experience in Homeland Security, Nielsen is currently a top aide with White House Chief of Staff and former DHS Chief General John Kelly. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right, time to tune to our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, for a little bit more. We've got Victoria Jones on the line today. Hey, Victoria.
Hello.
So Trump did it. He signed this executive order, although he almost left the office again before signing it. Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I'm here. Yes. No, I'm here. Well, but he did sign it.
Yeah, he did. And this is a lot more than just selling insurance across state lines. This is opening up the insurance market again to junk policies that don't cover anything.
Well, I mean, it's limited coverage is what it is. Yes, but they are definitely policies that cover much less, many fewer things than the policies under Obamacare. But there are two pieces here that I'm not going to say they'll give you any hope, but that are marginally better. One is that they probably would not come into effect until maybe 2019. And the other one is that they're almost certainly to be challenged in court.
Right. And hopefully the sooner the better. I would expect challenges coming very quickly, actually.
Yeah, I would expect challenges coming very quickly. I really would. So you've got those. Yeah, you've got the short terms. You've got the small businesses. So, you know, you've got both of those going on. And I think there are going to be challenges. And it's difficult to know how they will be viewed, and how far they will get in the courts. And if they do get to the high court, how that would go, because John Roberts, of course, was a defining vote in the original Obamacare vote.
That's right. Well, we'll
so that
see.
That was very interesting.
But this is just the latest of in Trump's machinations to try to undermine the Affordable Care Act. They couldn't do it through Congress, so he's trying whatever means he can muster up. And meanwhile, the exchange is open at healthcare.gov on November 1st, something that I will keep reminding my listeners, because the government won't be doing that because they've cut all advertising.
That's right. They are not promoting it. They're not advertising it. It's not something they are supporting. Now, my understanding is that Democrats are making efforts to let people know and that individual groups are making efforts to let people know, but it's not the same as the government getting behind it. And I mean, one of the impacts of the Trump administration not supporting the sign-up period, and I'm sure you've talked to your listeners about this, one of the impacts is suppose there are less sign-ups, which is, of course, very likely. They can then come out possibly in a couple of months' time or 3 or 4 months' time and say, see, there were far fewer people signing up for Obamacare.
Right. Well, duh. You know, it's what they're trying
they
to do.
Say, they wouldn't have to say why it was.
Right. No, of course not. No, just see, it's failing. It's failing. Right. So what else is going on today, Victoria?
Well, we do have other things going on, of course, because, you know, why wouldn't we? It's like that. Well, we've got we've got good news and bad news about cybersecurity.
Okay.
On the bad news front, bad news for Equifax on two fronts. One, Equifax shares dropped 3% today after it said it has disabled one of its customer help online pages and is investigating
another
possible cyber breach.
Unbelievable. You would think that that they would have taken all precautions in the wake of the biggest cyber breach ever that affected probably every adult in this country. But no, another one.
Yeah. So meantime, and I literally just saw this story in the Wall Street Journal, printed it out, so I haven't read it properly, so I'm reading it with you.
Okay.
But top congressional Republicans today have made the first significant moves to both boost federal oversight of credit reporting firms in response to the Equifax hack. Representative Patrick McHenry of North Carolina has introduced a bill to require the three major credit firms to submit to regular federal cybersecurity reviews for the first time. All three companies also would have to phase out their use of social security numbers to verify consumer identities by 2020.
Wow.
They're saying McHenry's sponsorship is significant. As a deputy GOP whip, he holds significant sway among House Republicans. The bill is an important starting point for the House Financial Services Committee. Also, Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho, chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, is asking federal banking regulators if they needed more authority to supervise the credit reporting firms to ensure they adequately protect consumer data, because he's concerned there may be a regulatory gap with respect to supervision of credit reporting agencies. And he wrote that in a letter to the heads of the Federal Reserve, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the FDIC. So there definitely are moves to act on this, and it is obviously Democrats are keen that there may be differences between what Democrats and Republicans want in a bill, but I think something will be hammered out on this. McHenry's legislation leaves it up to the companies to formulate a more modern method of identification. You see, so I think Democrats are going to not want that.
Right.
So there will be arguments about this, but I think this is really the first move. And if you get someone like Patrick McHenry on board with this, who really is quite a senior person and who is pretty conservative, you get your Rand Pauls and your Markeys from Massachusetts online with things like this.
Okay.
They band together.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes politics does make strange bedfellows.
Nobody likes their constituents phoning them up and say, I've been hacked and my identity was stolen. What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a huge problem. I mean, we're all sitting ducks right now. So.
Yeah. I got an email just early this week saying, this wasn't Equifax, saying, and I haven't been on Groupon for months. Say, oh, you want to change your Groupon password and something. So I'm like, what?
Uh-huh.
Groupon?
Right.
What's up with that?
Yeah, it's a constant thing. It's a constant thing. Jim Jeffries.
I'm going to get one of these password management things.
Yeah, I don't know how those work. They scare me.
You're probably right.
It all scares me. So do you know about this Mitch McConnell getting rid of the blue slips? Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it. basically, The Hill has covered this rather well. It's the kind of thing they would cover well. Basically, and I read it yesterday, and I have a very, very short memory, but the blue slips, which, as you know, a home state senator with a blue slip can move forward, or if they do not return what is known as a blue slip to the particular committee, can stop or slow down a judicial appointment,
right.
A judicial nomination.
Right.
And because judicial nominations for the Trump administration have been so slow that Mitch McConnell is thinking of, apparently, and has voiced it, getting rid of the blue slip system. It's not a law. It's a rule, and it's honored. And the Democrats are saying, you know, this is a bipartisan thing. It's been around a long time. It works, and it's just, you know, it's just, this is my word now, it's just gentlemanly. It just works and everybody gets along with it. And just because you're not getting your way, you want to get rid of it.
Now, Obama didn't.
You just get more like the House if you get rid of something like
right.
this.
Right. Now, Obama tried to nominate a lot of judges that the Republicans just wouldn't put through. Trump just hasn't been nominating them at the pace that Obama did. Right?
Right.
But so Mitch McConnell apparently trying to do away with the blue slips. I think in recent years, the only one that's ever used it, didn't Al Franken use it?
Not too
long
ago?
I think he did. So anyway, just one more thing. And of course, there's, you know, Trump wanting to get rid of the judicial filibuster, which is something that McConnell's holding the line on.
Allegedly. He is holding the line on that. And he's not the only one. There are others. In the Senate. Now, they may not all be there next year with Steve Bannon's primaries, but there are others in the Senate who also are saying, no, we are not getting rid of the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the Senate works. It was interesting. I was at the White House briefing today, and Chief of Staff John Kelly was asked about President Trump's frustrations, and he started by saying, well, you, you know, went on about the press a bit. And said, you know, get better sources, and he went a bit further into that and said, you know, get sources basically further up the food chain, which I thought was rather interesting, saying you were speaking to people too far down to know what's going on. And then he said Congress, and he went on about how our government is designed to be slow.
Oh, really?
And his sense as a man outside Washington is, as a businessman, he's more a man of action, and his great frustration is the process he finds himself in. So it's like, well, that is the process. It's how the government works.
Mm-hmm. So how was that press briefing? Apparently, Sarah Sanders didn't answer a single question. It was all John Kelly. Was he he's taken over the job of validating everything Trump says?
He just came out today. Well, he did, obviously, but that's his job.
Right.
He did. Day. Well, it was interesting because it was different than being snarked at by, you know, because she is that she does that very well. She's very qualified at it. And actually, I felt like we got some information. I mean, for example, on the attacks in Cuba
mm-hmm.
on American spies, American diplomats, and on some Canadian diplomats with these sound things that nobody knows where they're coming from.
Right.
That have caused intense pain and terribly debilitating symptoms, including loss of hearing and brain problems and all kinds of things. A man really pushed to get his question, and he had three questions. He only got one asked. But the answer from John Kelly, he would never have got this answer from Sarah Sanders. He said, I believe the Cuban government could stop the attacks.
Ooh.
Well, that's fascinating because mm-hmm. the reporting has been that they don't know who it is and that the Cuban government probably is not responsible and has been cooperating. Now, what does that answer mean?
Good question. It means that the government is somehow complicit in it.
Or knows.
Or knows
who's
doing it. Right.
Might know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. I'm just like, okay, I'm actually getting answers. I'm getting information, at least.
Right.
So it was interesting.
Change of pace. for the White House press briefing. All right. Victoria Jones of the Talk Media News Service. Find them at talkmedianews.com. Always a pleasure, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Quick timeout and back with Howie Klein next to take a look at the politics.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
Grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, hello, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good.
I'm good.
Good. So,
my computer, so I can talk to you. I've been just working away here.
You always do that. Every time I call, it seems like you're just finishing up a post. So what are you writing about now?
I'm right in the middle of one about a special election that no one even knew about. At least I didn't know about it, and no one I know knew about it. But on last Tuesday, this past just 2 days ago, there was a special Florida legislative election in the Orlando area. And you know how the Democrats have been doing so well all over the country?
Mm-hmm.
Democrats didn't even really do anything this time. They barely put up a candidate, and they certainly didn't fight for this, and the Republican won it in a landslide.
Wow.
And it's pretty depressing. I mean, the Florida Democratic Party is just so useless so I'm sort of doing a story about the Florida Democratic Party now, which is a difficult thing to write about. There's a lot of moving parts. But I was right in the middle of it when you called, and I'm glad to walk away from my computer and get it out of my mind for a few minutes.
Yeah, good, because Florida Democratic Party is they've been useless for quite a while. And Orlando, that's a very Democratic, that's a blue area that should have been a no-brainer.
Well, this is Southwest Orlando. It's actually a Republican-leaning area, but it's exactly the kind of seat that Democrats have been winning all over the country. I mean, actually, some of the New Hampshire seats mm-hmm. that the Democrats have been winning are far, far redder than this one. This one, there's a slight Republican voter registration advantage, 36 to 32%. So it's definitely a Republican area, but it's exactly the kind of seat that Democrats have been winning around the country, and it's exactly the kind of seats Democrats have to win if they're going to take back the House.
Speaking of New Hampshire, news broke this week that Carol Shea Porter is not running for re-election. That's a surprise, isn't it?
It was definitely a surprise for me. I haven't talked to her personally about it. I figured a lot of people will be talking to her, and she probably needs a little breathing space. But in a couple of weeks, I'll give her a call and find out what happened. I'm tending to take it at face value of what she said was that she literally wants to spend more time with her family.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's probably telling the truth.
Yeah, and then that makes sense. Look, that's a tough life being in Congress when you're away so much, even though they get a lot of time off. You're in D.C. You're separated from your family.
Right. And she's not as young as she used to be. and she's been in and out of Congress many times, mm-hmm. and this is going to be, and even though she won, she beat a Republican incumbent last time to get back into Congress. Trump won that district, so it definitely would have been a tough race for her. I think she would have probably been able to win it this time. So that's why I am taking it at face value that she just really wanted to spend more time with her family. You know, she's an interesting person, but also an interesting case, because when the Netroots first got started as a political force and was able to, in the very beginning, to start raising money for progressives, she was one of the ones. And, you know, Rahm Emanuel hated her. She's a grassroots community organizer, and she's the exact opposite of the kind of candidate that he wanted and demanded when he was the chairman of the DCCC. So she wanted to run, and he was completely against it and completely against her. And this was in 2006, I believe, and he recruited his own candidate, just some, you know, Schlemiel from the state legislature, who's, you know, just another Wall Street hack who would just be a perfect Rahm Emanuel kind of candidate, nothing to do with the Democratic Party, except he has a D next to his name. Mm-hmm. So Rahm picked that guy, and he just tried to crush Carol Shea Porter. And then a lot of the people who were active in the Netroots at the time, remember this is pre-Bernie, right, got behind her and helped her raise money, and she wiped the guy out in the primary. And Rahm was so furious that his candidate was beaten that he wouldn't help her in the general election against the Republican incumbent who she was running against. But we helped her, and she won. And Rahm then tried to take credit for it. Pardon me if I have to laugh about that. But even he couldn't pull that off. I mean, he was so opposed to her.
Wow.
And she was one of many candidates like that. There was a lot of Democrats, progressive Democrats, who ran with grassroots support in 2006, who Rahm opposed and tried to beat in the primaries. And then when he couldn't beat them in the primaries, then refused to help them in the general. So she's one of them. So she's had a tough time. She's never had any support from the DCCC. It's a very, very difficult district. You know, there are two districts in New Hampshire. One is, I bet you're glad you brought this subject
yeah,
up, aren't
no,
you?
It's interesting.
Well, so the other district, which there's a conservative Democrat, a new Dem named Ann Custer in that one.
Right.
That's the district. And that's a very blue district. And then, ironically, the progressive Democrat is in the red district. So Ann Custer is always voting with the Republicans, and she's in a blue district. And then Carol Shea Porter is the progressive, who's in the red district. So it's a kind of awkward and weird situation. So she's always got a hard time, and she's calling it quits.
Wow. And that's a shame. But Ann Custer, she's one of those ones who pretended to be more progressive when she was running. And then once she got in, she turned New Dem.
Yeah, that's right. She turned New Dem. And when I confronted her about it, because we had, you know, gotten to know each other, Blue America supported her. We mm-hmm. helped her raise money. We introduced her to other progressive organizations. And I felt like she let us down. And I asked her about it, and she got really nasty with me and said that I should go talk to Steny Hoyer. She's voting exactly the way he is telling her to vote.
Oh, wow.
And I think that she thought that I would think that was a good thing, that I would think that someone who's taking orders from Steny Hoyer, who's telling her how to vote in New Hampshire, that was a good thing.
Wow.
I mean, she literally, when she told me that, that's what she thought. And I was just astounded. That was the last conversation I ever had with her.
Good riddance. All right. Well, you know, so you mentioned the DCCC. This you have a post up at downwithtyranny.com that this is the DCCC's Candidates Week. What is Candidates Week?
So they invite their favorite candidates to Washington to meet consultants and lobbyists, and the lobbyists will write them checks. In other words, it's really more of a Blue Dog and New Dem kind of thing, although they invited some progressives as well when they couldn't get away with not inviting them. They tried not to. So they invited some. But generally speaking, like, you know, one of the districts I talked about was the 48th in California, which is Dana Rohrabacher's district. Mm-hmm. So in that district, I think there are 8 or 9 or 10 candidates. A lot of them are, you know, not, you know, they're just vanity candidates. They're not raising any money. They're not doing anything to win. They just put their name on the ballot for whatever reason. You know, maybe they want their girlfriend or boyfriend to see that they're running for Congress. I have no idea why vanity candidates run. But there are three very, very serious candidates in the race. There are two multimillionaire males and one just regular middle-class woman candidate. She's the progressive in the race. And the two guys are both kind of conservative Democrats, and they've both been endorsed by the New Dems. So the New Dems would take either one of them. Whereas this woman candidate, who's the progressive in the race, the DCCC would sort of like to push her out of it. They don't want, you know, they're afraid that, you know, because there's two men and one woman, that she may wind up winning, and then they're going to be stuck in their mind with a progressive, which they're very afraid of. So they didn't invite her. And their excuse that they sometimes use for why they invite and don't invite is, well, they are just inviting viable candidates. But the thing is that the three of them all raised around the same amount of money. They were all in the six figures of what they raised last quarter. So there was really no reason not to invite her. And when I tried to find out from my sources there, nobody could give me an answer. And then finally, someone got through to I think to Ben Ray Lujan, and he said, "Oh, but everybody's invited. Every candidate is welcome to come." Well, if you know, 6 weeks before the event, you send out a formal invitation to two of them, and the other one doesn't find out until the day of the event when I call her and ask her if she was invited, that isn't saying that it's really open to everyone.
Right.
So he's just a liar. The guy is just a disgrace. But so she didn't go. But she, you know, she spent a week campaigning in Orange County, while the other two were, you know, carousing around and hobnobbing with a bunch of D.C. Crooks and lobbyists.
Well, good.
And it was the same all over the country. I mean, you know, I and in fact, that's part of the story I'm writing about Florida now, because in the 27th district in Miami, which is the district that Ileana Ross-Lehtinen is abandoning. I can't emphasize enough that this is a deep blue district. This is the district that Obama kicked Romney's ass in. This is the district that Hillary – not only did Hillary win this district, Hillary – all right, let's put it like this. Forget about Hillary. This was the district that a Republican member of Congress represented that Trump did worst in, not just in Florida. He did – obviously it was worse in Florida, but in the whole country. This was the worst district Trump performed in, held by a Republican anywhere in America. This is a completely blue district. But because of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her loyalty and friendship with Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, this district has remained in Republican hands for a decade.
Right.
For a full decade, thanks to Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yep.
And that goes back to when Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, the Republican, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a fake Democrat, were both in the state Senate. And they at that time, the two of them participated in drawing the districts, the district boundaries. So in other words, Florida was doing one of their major gerrymanders at the time. And the agreement that Wasserman Schultz made was that if she was given not just the Democratic district, which of course she was given, but she was in the state Senate, but she was going to run a couple of years later. So she wanted a Jewish district, not just a Democratic district. Hmm. She wanted a Jewish district.
Right, which she
got. I literally watched the boundaries going around buildings. This building is filled with Jews. Get that one. No, there's no Jews in there. Forget that. You know, go around that one. And
wow.
Just building by building by building, she drew her own district. And they did the same thing for Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, a Republican who was looking for different things. She was looking for, at the time, for elderly Cubans. And it's just amazing. The corruption was just phenomenal. And then, you know, Wasserman Schultz, as sort of the boss of South Florida, the Democratic Party boss of South Florida didn't let any Democrats ever run against Ross Lenton.
Right.
And kept her in office.
Right. They also protected, they protected the whole South Florida contingent. It was the Diaz-Balart brothers as well. Lincoln Diaz-Balart is now out of Congress, but Mario is still in. And
yes, Mario is still in. Lincoln, by the way, just so you know, is plotting his return to Cuba as president of Cuba. He thinks he's going to be the president of
Cuba.
Really? Based on the fact that their father was the minister of the interior who physically himself, not just telling people to do it for him, he physically tortured political prisoners to death.
Oh my!
And based on his service to Cuba, Lincoln Diaz-Balart thinks he's going back as president of Cuba.
Wow!
With Trump thinks is a great idea.
Oh my goodness! It just gets and their brother, they have another brother, Jose Diaz-Balart, who is
great. Awesome.
On the news. He works for NBC News.
He's a cool guy.
Is he?
But I think he's pretty cool. I mean, he's got two crazy right-wing psycho brothers. One of them really insane, Lincoln. He's the other one.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, yes. But the point is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz protected the three Republican Cubans in South Florida for years after after she should have just let it go. And when I say she supported them, I don't mean it in some, theoretical way. She, at the time, was the chairman of the Red to Blue program at the DCCC.
Yep.
The Red to Blue program only had one job. The name of the program tells what that job was: turning a district from red Republican to blue Democrat.
Yep.
Very easy. That's her only job. And what is the first thing she does? She announces that she's supporting three Republicans in the districts right next to her own, where she could have some impact. And there were three good, well, at least two good Democrats, one terrible Democrat, but two really good Democrats running. And she opposed them and helped the Republicans.
Wow.
And then we raised such a stink in the Netroots about it that Rahm was forced to fire her as the chairman of Red to Blue. And then she bounces back, and she's been bouncing back ever since. And then finally washes up as the DNC chairperson, where she's able to steal the election for Hillary in the primary and destroy America. If people ask me, why is Trump president? And, I'll say, there are a lot of reasons. But one of those reasons that's equal to all of the other reasons is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's what happens when you get some kind of a monster like her and let's let her run. You wind up in the end with the worst thing that's ever happened to our country, or at least the worst thing that's happened to our country since the Civil War.
Yes, I fully agree. She is complicit. Any word from her district? I know Tim Canova is running against her, and we get his emails. But is she hurting this time out, do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I saw Tim last week. He was here, or the week before. He was here in L.A., and it was the first time I met him in person. We've been talking through email and on the phone for years now. He went through it with me a bit. She's a lot of people are still frightened of her, but less than used to be. People used to be afraid to go against her because she had a lot of power. Now a lot of her power is dissipated. And when she yells and screams and threatens people, they laugh in her face. But it's still a very, very uphill battle for Tim.
Mm-hmm.
But he's fighting hard.
He is. No, he's a good guy. I'd love to see him win. I don't see her as visible as she used to be down here. So if that's anything. So the DCCC Candidates Week is going on, and it's mostly Blue Dogs and New Dems, and they're trying to get them. One thing I don't get.
They introduce them to these lobbyists, and then the Blue Dogs and New Dems agree to support whatever the lobbyist is being paid to support. And then they'll write them checks. So that's really what's happening there.
It's all about
all
the money.
These crummy corporate lobbyists are buying the souls of these Blue Dogs and New Dems. That's what Candidates Week really comes down to. Of course, the DCCC will never say that, but that's what it is. So I was getting calls there are some people who work at the DCCC who would like to blow the building up and hate every one of them, and then but they don't do that. Instead, they just call me and tell me what's going on.
Ah, I'm guessing.
So I've been getting calls all week from, you know, them, you know, saying, you know, telling me whatever they want to tell me about things that they think are ridiculous that, that happened there. So I'm including that in my post about Florida.
Oh, good. You know, I used to wonder when Donna Edwards was, she was one of the co-chairs of Red to Blue, why we couldn't get better candidates in. And now I know that Ted Lieu is a regional vice chair of the DCCC. And why, is he not powerful enough to say, what the hell are you doing? Why are you dissing the progressives?
He is gaining power. The staffers who run the DCCC so do not report to him. So in other words, they have some right wing Democrat, a real asshole named Kyle, who is the staffer for California, and but he doesn't report to Ted, unfortunately. So he's the one that's recruiting all these right wing Democrats. He worked for Raul Ruiz. He was Raul Ruiz's chief of staff. Raul Ruiz is one of the worst Democrats in Congress, and this guy is just like him. And he's a real bad guy. And I've been trying to explain that to Ted, but Ted always wants to see what's the best in people. Ted's idea about how to do this is to be neutral and to make sure that everybody gets an equal chance. So he won't take the side even though he's a progressive, he won't take the side of any progressive. He and his office are there for everyone. So whether you're a New Dem or a Blue Dog or a progressive, and you come to Ted for advice and help, he'll give it to you. He's helping everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's his perspective.
Well,
he thinks that's the job of the regional vice chair, is to just be helpful to all Democrats.
Well, that's how it should be. You know what? If they were being fair, all the candidates would be invited to this thing. The DCCC or any party entity shouldn't have a role in the primary other than to help all the candidates.
Exactly.
And you know, when the party gets involved in primaries and they pick the, you know, who they want to win, that's a real problem. And the Democrats are just as bad as the Republicans when it comes to that.
You're right. And in fact, the progressive who's running in that Miami seat that I talked about, Florida 27, is named Michael Hepburn. So I asked Michael about not being invited and what that meant to him. And he said he didn't care, because even if they would have invited him, he wouldn't have thought it was appropriate to go, and he wouldn't have gone. His point is he doesn't want to hear from the DCCC or even from the Florida Democratic Party until after he wins the primary.
Wow.
His point is they should have no role in the primary. He doesn't want their help. He doesn't want them to help his opponents. He just says after he wins the primary, they've got to help him. And before he wins the primary, it's none of their business.
Right.
So I like his attitude. It's a huge race. There's like, I think there are 9 people in it now, although maybe somebody dropped out. But it's a lot of people, and it's a difficult thing. And I know the Democrats were parading one of their candidate around like he was some kind of prize poodle. He's a state rep. I can't remember his name. I think Dave Richardson. I think that's his name. You know him at all?
No.
You know.
Don't know anything
he's,
about him.
He represents a lot of that district already in Sacramento.
He's
a kind of garden variety Democrat. His claim to progressive fame is that he's gay. So, you know, hey, I'm gay. That means I'm good.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Talk to Kyrsten Sinema. Right. Talk to Kyrsten Sinema about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting the sort of a dichotomy here. You have another post up at Down with Tyranny. Would you admire Schumer if Bannon was actually a DSCC plant? Steve Bannon is doing sort of the opposite, where he's saying he's going to help a primary challenge to every vulnerable, every Republican who is up for re-election in 2018 in the Senate, except for Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz is the one he likes. But he's going up against
It's not so much he likes Ted Cruz. It's that Ted Cruz is owned by the same guy that owns Bannon, this guy Mercer.
Right.
So who's a multi-billionaire, and he's financing Bannon. So Bannon can't very well go up against his candidate. So he said, okay, they're gonna put primaries up against every single Republican who's up for re-election except Cruz.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Now I'm waiting to see what they do in the House. So far, Bannon. Now I know that Bannon is plotting, you know, secretly against Ryan, which is fine. But I'm waiting to see what he actually does. I've heard several different things about how he's going to try to take Ryan down. However, so far he and Ryan are butting heads on the one candidate that where they disagree, and that's in Staten Island, New York 11, and in that district. The incumbent is a former DA, the former district attorney of Staten Island, named Dan Donovan. So Dan Donovan is kind of just a nebbishy, garden variety Republican. He's kind of a mainstream conservative. He's not any good, but he's not a Nazi. He's not like he's not a Bannon Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So Bannon hooks up with someone who is that kind of Republican, and so he's backing someone who's challenging the incumbent. And who is that?
Michael Grimm.
Mikey. Michael Grimm, former congressman who pled guilty to tax evasion to get out of much more harsh charges. I mean, he could be charged with any crime. He's committed every one of them. He's a former mafia thug who's done everything you could think of. I don't want to accuse the guy of murder because I don't know for sure that he's murdered people, but I can't imagine that he hasn't. He was a heavy for the mafia.
Wow.
And so he was in prison, got out of prison, and decided he's going to run again, and Bannon jumped right on the bandwagon.
Amazing.
So Ryan is freaking out because Donovan is one of his puppets, and he doesn't want to see this mafia thug back in Congress. And the thought among Republicans, among Ryan's team, is that if Michael Grimm wins the primary, which he may win, then they'll lose the general election. That district is a swing district. Obama won it very, very handily. Mm. Hillary lost it, but she was just the wrong candidate for a district like that. It's a very blue-collar district, and she couldn't win a district like that. So Trump won it, but Obama won it nice. It wasn't close. So the thought is that if the Democrats nominate a decent candidate, which is a big if, and Grimm wins the Republican primary, then the Democrats will take that district back.
Right. So is there a chance if Steve Bannon comes up with equally heinous senatorial candidates to go up against the establishment candidates, you know, sort of like the, what was her name? Christine. I'm not a witch woman. You know, people
from Delaware.
Yeah, from Delaware. If he comes up with more, or Sharon Engel, remember her in Nevada. If he comes up with people like this,
he may actually come up with her.
He
has a candidate already. This guy Danny Tarkanian.
Right.
In Nevada. So he's bad enough. So yes, the answer to your question is yes. That could help throw the Senate to the Democrats. So that's why I said that. You know, is Bannon working for Schumer? I mean, he seems to be doing more to help Democrats than Schumer is doing. The perfect example is coming right up in December, where Bannon had a candidate in Alabama, Judge Roy Moore,
mm-hmm.
who beat the establishment guy that was being backed by Trump and McConnell, and he beat him badly. And even though the establishment candidate spent, you know, I don't know, 10 times more money.
Yep.
I mean, just over $10 million on this Republican primary. So now he's got a decent Democrat that he's running against, kind of a mainstream Democrat. And the thought is that it's a winnable race for the Democrat. I don't think it is, but it's not out of the question. I mean, if the Democrat could possibly win, but it doesn't seem likely in a state like Alabama, where they actually kind of like a crackpot like Roy Moore.
Right. Oh boy, Hallie Klein. Well, it's nothing if not interesting, but it's it's not in the stomach inducing, let's just put it that way, because we could wind up with a bunch of Roy Moores in the Senate, but it could create openings for some Democrats to get in as well. With that, we're out of time. Our half hour just flies by. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com, and of course the Blue America Pack. I'll put up links on the blog as usual. Thank you, Howie.
Thank you, Nicole. Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye. And with that, we're done for the day. Thank you, as always, for listening. I will talk to you tomorrow. Digby will be here, so see you then.